Welcome to the Enchanted Ears podcast,
where we discuss anything and everything Disney.
I'm Angela.
And I'm Joe. And on today's episode, we are discussing the levels of Disney fandom.
Yes.
And specifically around like theme parks, because there's obviously, if you do all of Disney fandom, you can get pretty intense.
There's a lot more levels. I'm pretty sure that we don't know the levels.
I'm not talking like quoting, you know, Star Wars comic books and things like that level of fandom, because that's, I mean, Star Wars fandom, I mean, that's a whole other level. I'm talking like theme park, more Disney vacation fandom.
I mean, if you have a Disney tattoo, I mean, I feel like that's got to be
that's
somewhere
in there too. But more so, not that deep, but kind of like newbie, I've been to a park to extreme Disney fan.
Right. And I mean, they're not in like they're in a loose order, but of course there's wiggle
mixing
room in there. Yeah.
100%. Before we get into that, I want to cover the Disney news of the week. So Disney announced some more blue sky concept art and things, specifically around the Avatar attraction, land, experience. They keep going back and forth that's going to happen in Disneyland. But it seems like this is going to be a water ride. So this is at least an attraction that we're seeing. Seems to be a boat ride. The rumor is it's going to potentially be the Shanghai Pirates of the Caribbean ride system. And so it's going to be based more on the second movie, which is
The Way of Water.
Yeah, The Way of Water, geared around that. I think it's looks very expansive. You know, I immediately thought of...
And expensive.
Yeah, I immediately thought of the submarine voyage with Nemo. Like, it could go there because it's a big lagoon. I know some other people said the rumor is it's going to go in DCA, kind of in the Hollywoodland area. Other people are also saying, hey, this could just be part of Disneyland Forward. This is a new expansion, potentially, because it definitely is going to take up a lot of space. But it's interesting because, again, it's concept art. Nothing has been announced definitively. They kind of did this too with like Indiana Jones and Encanto, you know, with Animal Kingdom. Like, there's more concept art coming out. They're basically going as close to saying it's happening, like right up to that line with all of this stuff.
It's very confusing because like I sort of took it as that we are putting this out on our official Instagram.
Well,
it's happening.
It's Imagineering. They have like this like web series on YouTube now. And like the first episode was like the Tiana animatronics, which looks phenomenal.
Oh, they look
all the
so
animatronics.
Good.
But I think that was like day two or day three was, hey, we're doing all this research in like South America for an expansion. But again, it's not like they're going to the point of the line of saying this is happening. It's just like we're researching it. Like potentially this is happening. So it's weird. It's a way of drumming up all this interest without actually even doing anything.
Yeah, it's very, I don't know, it's bizarre. I don't like it if they're starting to show us stuff that could possibly might happen. So I don't know. It's weird. It's weird to me, but I don't know. Because it seems like their announcements on their posts at least seem like they are more definitive, like this is happening. So I don't know. I don't know what they're doing.
I think D23 is shaping up to be a huge
D23. Yeah, I think so.
Because I do think, to your point, the way they're promoting it, it's like it's happening, but they're just not announcing it. And maybe, you know, we've talked a lot about this. Universal's playbook is they have a roller coaster built and they're still like, I don't know, maybe we're building something, maybe we're not.
We might be doing Donkey Kong.
Yeah, and we've talked about this where, you know, Disney in the past has announced a lot of stuff that's never gotten built, whereas Universal builds it before they even announce it. And we've talked about maybe Disney needs to take a playbook out of Universal, and maybe they're doing that. Maybe it's, hey, all of this stuff's in the works. It's not finalized yet, but they're kind of promoting it as, again, it's happening without officially saying it's happening until it's a little bit more definitive. I think D23 is going to be pretty big, though. Something's definitely going on. Joe Rohde's back.
Joe Rohde's been spotted in the parks
times. He's at Disneyland and Disney World. They're saying, obviously, you know, he's kind of mentoring Imagineers, but Bob Iger has been in Disneyland. Josh D'Amaro was in Disney World. Like, things are happening in the parks. Like, the executives are in a lot more. So I think D23, I think they're holding back some of the stuff too, because they want to make these announcements for D23.
Right.
One announcement we did get, though, around the parks, this is an international park, is over in Disneyland Paris. The Studios Park is going to be getting a new name once the new World of Frozen Arendelle opens, and it's going to be called Disney Adventure World. Because basically, and I did not realize this, but the park opened in 2002, and since then, once Frozen and everything else opens, 90% of the park has been redone. So basically, Whoa. The idea that, you know, it is a movie studio, kind of like Hollywood Studios, is out the door. Like, that theme doesn't fit anymore. So they're kind of completely retheming it, renaming it. I don't know that I love the name.
What is it again? Adventure
World? Adventure World. Like, you would think it should be like Worlds of Adventure or something. Like I can see, I see what they're coming from, with you have Avengers and Frozen, that sort of stuff. You have different worlds, but Adventure World just, it doesn't roll off the tongue.
Okay, so here's my question. Is that the name of this place, or is that a translation? Because I feel like in French, maybe it sounds really good, and then it's translated to English.
Oh, it could be.
Maybe it's lost in translation, because Adventure World sounds like a second-rate theme
park.
But
they can call it whatever they want in English. It doesn't, like, it has to translate perfectly, I feel like.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know. I'm just trying to reach for something. But yeah, Adventure World sounds like a second-rate theme park. It doesn't sound like a Disney property, because it seems
like Worlds of Adventure would have been better. Because there's multiple worlds.
Right.
You know, I think that's the thing. It's not like it's one world of adventure. You're going to multiple different places.
Maybe they are trying to stay away from the universal name of Island of Adventure.
Could be.
But
again, it's Paris. I don't know. It's different. So there's going to be, with this, like, some new retheming at the front of the park. They're also announced a new Alice in Wonderland stunt show. Which
BMX or
the official announcement didn't mention this, but some of the other reporting is saying that it's going to be like a BMX stunt show. The interesting note I thought about this was in the press release on the Disney Parks blog is that there's two potential outcomes, and the audience will decide the outcome.
This is amazing.
Yeah, so it adds repeatability, because audience participation, I guess, is going to decide probably whether it's like Alice succeeding or the Queen of Hearts or, you know, whoever.
Yeah, I mean, this level of interactivity is something that, like, when we talked about, like, the Galactic Star Cruiser, mm-hmm. like, this is something that I felt was lacking in the Star Cruiser, because I felt like the games and of it should have had more weight, and that would have made the experience, like, more renewable than it was. I mean, not that it wasn't a renewable feel, but... So this is kind of cool to see them doing this tweaking, and I would love to see them do this more at the other parks and with different experiences.
Yeah, I think this is great. I also think the like the outfits, I have some pictures of the cast members in the outfits. Mm-hmm. It has like it makes sense now that it's going to be like a BMX or stunt show, because it does have like a very like edgy vibe to it, you know, instead of talk about acrobatics and stuff like that. So it looks really cool, like, just from the concept, the costume, the costumes and everything like that, and this kind of idea that you'll impact it. So that's exciting. They also mentioned a nighttime activation is what they're calling it, of Avengers Campus. but it's basically like projection mapping on the Web Slingers building and some music and things like that. So it's kind of like a nighttime show projection mapping, but they're calling it an activation. Again, I think it's just to keep people interested at night and kind of provide a little bit different vibe, which is good. I like that they're kind of tweaking Avengers Campus and trying to make it more interesting than kind of what you have there.
Yeah, that sounds really interesting. I like the use of, you know, like the word use there.
Well, I think that's to basically say it's not a nighttime show. Like, it's not a full-fledged show. It's just something is happening, kind of like with the Tree of Life, they call those awakenings.
Yeah,
you know, it's a little vignette type thing. So I think that's to kind of set expectations on what's going to happen here. And then Disney announced with like their upcoming movies, some dates on movies coming up. So the Mandalorian and Grogu movie is going to be coming out in 2026. I'm guessing that means we're not going to get any new Mandalorian before then. That's just kind of my thought there.
Such a gap.
Yeah, it's a long way to wait. But they also did mention that the live-action Moana movie is coming out in 2026. Now, I personally was hoping this movie was not going to happen once they announced Moana 2, because I just don't see how this movie makes sense. When they're making the live-action movies, at least the movies were like 20 or 30 years old, so it's been a while since you've seen it. But Moana 2 is coming out this year, And within a year and a half, you're going to have a live action Moana. So it seems odd. They hadn't mentioned anything in a while, so I was hoping it was going away, but it seems like it's still happening.
And Moana is a movie. I mean, I don't feel like a lot of these movies make sense, but Moana to me does not make sense because the story is girl goes to ocean. Girl has beautiful animation in ocean that makes movie interesting with wonderful singing. And it's just like, so you're going to have to do the singing well, but you're probably not going to be able to get the same people to do all of the singing. And then you don't, like, you're going to have to put in a real ocean or a fabricated computer CGI ocean. Yeah. It's just, it doesn't make sense.
It feels like The Rock is making this movie happen. It feels forced. Yeah. Like, he wants to be Maui in real life, and he's making this movie move forward is really what it feels like. Because I don't know why. Especially when you have Moana 2. Like, whenever they didn't have Moana 2, it kind of made more sense of, like, okay, this is the next Moana movie. This is how we're continuing the story. I could kind of see that, even though I don't really think it needed a live-action version. But now that you have a direct sequel a year and a half before this movie is supposed to come out, it seems odd. Yeah. It seems kind of confusing.
They also had, like, a initial look of the Mufasa movie, like a still of a young Mufasa. Again, like, kind of going into that talk about the Moana movie.
I'm excited about this one. I'm on the opposite side of this one. I think this is interesting because it's a new story.
It's a new story. I think that is interesting.
You just didn't like the style of the live action.
I really did not like the style of, yeah, I don't want to see the lions be real lions. I will watch National Geographic and watch actual lions if I want to see that.
I think when it's not the favorite movie of your childhood, and again, it's a different tale, and you can kind of just accept it for its own movie, I think the animation style may not be as big a hurdle. But yeah, when you're comparing an animated classic to the live action version they put out, I can definitely see that. But I think the story is going to be interesting enough that it's going to be a good movie. And the other thing is the quality of the graphics, the live action, the animation, whatever you want to call it, is going to be 5 or 6 years ahead. And so that should hopefully add some improvement. But I'm excited about this one. It's at least a new tale.
I think that we need to do a watch through of all of the Lion King movies and do something with it, because I would be interested in watching, well, first of all, I'll watch The Lion King anytime, but then watching Lion King 1.5, because I think I've only seen that like one time and I didn't like it. So I'm curious to know, like, yeah, you kind of brought up that thing of it being my childhood. Maybe whenever Lion King 1.5 came out, I was like, oh, this is stupid, this is childish or whatever, because I was maybe in that age range when it came out. So I would be interested in watching that and up to 2, which I also loved. And then maybe we could add Mufasa in before that. I don't know. I think that would be a fun idea. I like this.
Yeah, I mean, I would be open to it because I know I've seen one of the sequels. I don't remember, though, if it was 2 or 1.5. And it was a long time ago. It was when I was younger. But definitely would be open to, yeah, to kind of watching them again. So that's something we'll have to do. All right, so let's jump into our main segment today, going through Disney vacation fandom levels. And specifically talking like Disney vacations, because I think there's kind of like a whole, before you even get to like a Disney vacation fandom, obviously, like, you Disney movies, you like Pixar, like the way I look at it, and I think the way we dug into these levels, it's like the largest pool, almost like a funnel, like whatever like the most people do is kind of like the top, and then as you get less and less people, it gets more specific. So I feel like there's so many people that watch movies and know about Disney, but then you start getting into the subset of people that actually take Disney vacations.
Yeah, it is interesting too, because I think for the first like, ooh, maybe, how long have we been doing this podcast?
It is coming up on 6 years.
Oh my gosh. Okay, yeah. So for the first probably like four and a half years.
Till about last week.
I was like 100% the let's talk about the movies person. I don't really care about the parks person. And then I feel like it is interesting that you bring that up, because I feel like in the past like year especially, I've kind of joined the ranks of like, okay, I'm into the parks. What's going on in the parks? What are the differences between the parks? And I haven't complained to you like as much like, hey, we haven't been talking about the movies as much or whatever, because I feel like, yeah, like I've reached that level of fandom where I'm like super concerned about like the parks, park news and stuff.
I also feel like the past few years, like you have to figure like 2018, like maybe 2017 to like through 2020, Disney absolutely dominated the box office. Disney Animation, yeah, Pixar, true. Marvel, Star Wars. Everything was going on, and there were so many movies coming out. And lately, the movies have been a little bit lackluster. They haven't done as well as the box office. We've had the whole streaming thing of just every Pixar movie going straight to streaming.
Or the fact that movies that came out are taking so long to get into streaming, looking at you, Wish.
Well, yeah, I mean, just the timing of it. But like, yeah. I feel like the movies haven't been as popular, and the theme parks have become the discussion because it is, what is Disney going to do? Epic Universe is coming. And now, like,
it's the nostalgia of it, too. Like,
yeah, but there's a larger discussion about theme parks, though, because right. You have a whole contingent of people who love Universal who are talking about, you know, Universal's building this new park. There's Super Nintendo. There's Harry Potter. There's How to Train Your Dragon. What's Disney going to do? And then you have Disney people talking about. So I think that's just like more in the conversation now. And just the movies just have not been at the forefront because they haven't been as strong as they have been, you know, maybe 5 years ago.
Yeah, I agree with that. And I think they're going to stay there for a while because it's going to take Disney, I think, a while to strike back. And I mean, again, Epic Universe opens in 2025. So
yeah, next year.
That's going to be dominating the news streams and news outlets then as well. I mean, I'm really looking forward to it. They've been releasing a bunch of stuff about the Isle of Berks, so I'm going to be rewatching the How to Train Your Dragons movies because those are, I mean, I know that the first couple at least are solid. I haven't like kept up with it because I watched them a while ago, so I'm going to be rewatching.
Yeah. I do think Disney, in terms of movies, I think the next couple of years, I think is going to turn around because you're going to have Moana 2, Frozen 3, you're having another Toy Story. I think even Marvel this summer with the new Deadpool movie.
Oh,
I think
yeah,
that course corrects the MCU and gets everybody excited about the MCU again going forward. Yeah. And then you have Avengers movies coming up. So like, I think the next couple of years, I think it's going to shift back to Disney dominating the box office. And you're going to have that discussion, which I think will help them because to your point, I think once Epic Universe opens, there's going to be a whole discussion on look how great Epic Universe is. And so I think Disney maybe doing well at the movies will help take some of the pressure off the theme parks a little bit of, hey, look, Disney's doing great over here. They can, you know, maybe announce an expansion at Disneyland, you know, maybe some new lands at Walt Disney World that are going to take years to come to fruition, but it gives them some time kind of in the news cycle around it. So,
and I do have to point out, like, as we're talking about them not doing as well at the box office, but it doesn't mean the movies aren't good.
No,
I mean,
exactly. Like, because, but that's been the discussion of hey, these movies, they're not doing well. And some of them haven't been
Elemental
as good.
Was.
Yeah. Oh, Elemental
so
was great. Yeah.
It was,
yeah.
I mean, I think I've said this before. I think you can make the argument that Elemental is the best Pixar film, like, period. Like, I just think it's so good, so clever, and so, like, fresh.
Yeah. Elemental's great, but you have movies like Luca was good, Soul was good, but I feel
they're
like
good.
But they're not as, I feel like, memorable as some of the other Pixar movies. You know, and so you've had a couple where they've been great movies, but just not like Pixar level movies, you know, if that feels that way. And it's just been a little bit lackluster. Marvel struggled a little bit. Like, it just seems like all of their franchises are just taking a little bit of time.
Yeah, they're limping.
They don't know what to do with
right
Star
now.
Wars, you know, that sort of thing. But again, we're talking vacation. So you already love the Disney movies, you know all that sort of stuff, and you start taking a Disney vacation. And I think that's the first level here. So I think again, if you look at the broadest audience here, it is you've been to a Disney park. Yeah. I think that's kind of your entry point. Most likely Walt Disney World. I think that is where most, I think, vacationers go.
Yeah,
I feel like
it's an interesting like cross between like this is their flagship park, but it's not. Like Disneyland is obviously like the flagship park, but because Walt Disney World is so large, I think that is, you know, that is the most well traveled. It is the one that is like it's super crowded.
Yeah, I think it's more seen as a vacation destination.
Yeah,
and I also think you get a lot of international guests, like people from Europe.
Mm-hmm.
It's easier for them to fly to Florida than it is to California. So I think it just more people tend to go there. So that's like your first level. That's like the top level. So, you know, if you've been to a Disney park, good job. You're kind of like the top of the fandom here. I think the next level down as we kind of go down, and maybe we could call it our iceberg here as we go.
Yeah, and under the surface. I think some of these can move around a little bit too. I mean, they're not necessarily steps, because I definitely think that there are some of these things that are lower down on the list that we did prior to, like, even this step right here. But
I definitely think there is some overlap. But again, I think kind of in general, if you think about like the levels of fandom and kind of just like the more extreme levels you get, I think it's roughly this. So I think the next one and the next two kind of go together. So it's you've been to multiple parks, and I'm not talking you've
Epcot
been to Epcot
and
Magic
Hollywood
Kingdom.
Studios. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
I'm talking you've been to Walt Disney World and you've been to Disneyland, or, you know, even internationally, which I think is a step
it's smaller,
below.
It's a smaller like subset of people. So would be like that is A, and then this, and then the next one would be like B, like moving door.
I think
that's
kind of
three.
I think that's kind of like bonus
like two
points.
And a half.
I think that's like bonus points if two and a half. If you've been to like an international park. But I would also put a Disney cruise in with this, because I do think there's probably a lot of people that go to Walt Disney World and have been on a cruise. And I kind of see that as the same as if you have been to Walt Disney World and you travel over to Disneyland, because it's kind of like another park. It's a different Disney vacation experience.
Yeah.
And I think that is just an additional level, because if you're somebody that's like, hey, I've been to Disney World, or I've been to Disneyland, I've been to a Disney park, I've enjoyed this so much, I want to do something else Disney related. You know, I want to see a park that's in a different location, or I want to go on a cruise where it's like, it's a completely different experience. Maybe you've been on a cruise before, but you're like, I want to be on a Disney cruise. So I think when you start thinking in that level too, of like, how is my, you know, I want to do a Disney vacation in a different format, you are much more a fan than somebody who's just been like, oh, I've been to Walt Disney World. Yeah. You know, like I've been there one time with my family. And so
by the way, just a little disclaimer, we're not saying you're not a fan.
Oh, right.
Yeah.
Right.
Like if you haven't done these things, it's not like we're saying, oh, you're not as cool. It's just like sometimes when you're thinking like, oh, ways to progress your, you know, how much you love Disney. Like, for example, we recently like took the Disney cruise because you know, we've done different things with, you know, Disney parks. We've gone to different Disney parks, but we've never actually taken like the cruise. What is the cruise like? Disney does a good job with the parks. They've done a good job with everything that we've done. So why don't we try this?
Yeah, I 100% agree with you. It's not that you're not a fan if you've, you know, not done some of this stuff, but I kind of think of this as like, if I'm talking to somebody and then I'm rattling off all of this stuff, the more I list out here, the more they go like, oh, you're like
way into Disney.
Yeah, yeah.
Like
yeah.
Basically
you're one of those Disney adults.
I would say it's like the judgy you're a Disney adult thing.
That's the way I kind of see it.
Or you're a Disney family. I mean, like there's people that,
So that, jokingly, that's kind of the way I see it, because, you know, there's a lot of people, and to your point, like a lot of people take big family vacations to Walt Disney World. So I think there's a lot of people that go to Walt Disney World that are like, again, they like Star Wars, they like Marvel, they like the movies, but casually they'll just say, oh yeah, I've been to Walt Disney World. But like, that's where it ends. You know what I'm saying? So it's kind of like they consider themselves, yeah, I like Disney, but they would never consider going to California. They would never consider going on a Disney cruise. And so I think that's, again, it's not that they're not a fan, but like this is where you kind of get in the more extreme fan.
I will
levels.
Say, I feel like I need to advocate here a little bit for your Disney parents. So these are people, like, I feel like kind of putting these people in with this group of people that are like, I really love and enjoy Disney parks, and I'm now going to perpetrate that into a future generation and take my child there, even though I know I see kids that, you know, my kid's going to get whiny in the middle of the day. They're going to get tired. And so they still take that initiative to be like, I'm taking my kid there, even though they know that it is not, you know, there's going to be moments where their kid is having a meltdown because it is just a lot. So I feel like you can put those people in there
like
as
passing
well.
The torch on.
Yeah. Passing the torch on people.
Yeah. I think that does go well. I think, yeah, passing the torch, and kind of the next level that we had was around like the merch and kind of like the food. So it's, you're somebody who buys ears. You have, you have more lounge flies than days of the week, which I think you're up to now. You're the people that the popcorn buckets come out, and you know we're debating on, is this the greatest popcorn bucket Disney's ever made or not? Like, that's the next level. Again, like you've been to some parks, you maybe been on a cruise, but now you're like, you're all in. I mean, we have a friend. We have a friend who's recently started going to the parks.
Yeah.
A couple times, and we're like, "Oh, have you gotten ears yet?" And she's like, "No, I'm not buying any merch. I'm not into it." And we're like, "As soon as you get one, though, you're just gonna be all decked out on it." So, again, I think there is like,
I think we need to get her like an inaugural set of ears or something.
But like, there is a line there though. So you can see that like she's been to Walt Disney World a few times now, but has not purchased merch. So like, there's definitely that level of like, you can be a fan, you can love it. But there's people who are like, the merch is a line I don't want to cross yet. But like, once you cross that, it just keeps going and going from there. Like, then you're down the rabbit hole and you're like, you want the new emos that you're dressing. You want the popcorn buckets. You want the ears. You want the lounge flies. Like, it just, it goes on and on and on from there. You want the mugs. Like, I have way too many Disney mugs.
Yeah. Yeah. Like,
That's the only reason I have this podcast, is so that I can have a reason to have my Disney mugs.
Have the Disney mugs. Yeah. I think that's a really, you know, good point. I'm at the point in my Disney fandom where I don't hide it. In fact, I make it a part of my personality. Like, I used to have I still kind of do have like a full work wardrobe where they're like nice dressy clothes. And then I realized, like, Angela, you're an elementary school teacher. Just wear your Disney shirts. The kids will like it.
Fits in perfectly.
And now I'm like, I just want to get rid of all my dress clothes. Like, I just want to wear my t-shirts that have Disney characters on it, because it makes me happy and they like it too. So let's just make it even more part of the personality. Another one, like, kind of that goes along with this is, you know about that popcorn bucket because you know about all of the Disney food. So like, you know, when we first started,
like, you're subscribed to Disney food blog.
Oh yeah.
Like, you follow all of them. You know every special item that's dropping.
Right. You know when some of the booths are changing over at Epcot, not repeats, but there's new items. But, you know, whenever you first go to a Disney park, I remember the first time going there, we were like, oh, this is an amusement park. It's an amusement park fair. We tended to just get like chicken nuggets and
we ate mostly a quick service.
Yeah,
we ate quick services.
We
really weren't.
And I mean, I think we were in the camp of, ugh, like, they have like amusement park food. And then we sort of.
Well, I wasn't. I like that kind of food.
Well, yeah, so. You do. You like eating the same thing. And like, but then once, you know, I started to see and get a little deeper, I was like, oh my gosh, like, they have all of these restaurants that have all of these different kinds of food.
And they are hidden too. Like, that, like, you're
they're
right.
Not like, super in the forefront.
Yeah,
you like have to know to find
them.
Yeah,
like, I feel like we did a lot of quick service because that is what is most predominant and I think is the easiest to find. Because, like, you need reservations for table service and that sort of stuff.
You have to make an effort. And again, it's,
like,
not that these,
hidden too.
It's not that the people don't want to make the effort. It's that, like you said, it's hidden. It's, oh, you have to know that, I forget how many days in advance you have to make your reservations.
But even think about Be Our Guest. Be Our Guest is in Fantasyland.
Oh, yeah. I couldn't find it today.
You would
don't
never,
hand me
you would never know it's there unless you know it's there. You know what I'm saying? Space 220.
Oh.
Space 220 basically looks like it's the exit to Mission Space.
Yeah.
You know, and so, like, you would never know those places are there unless you knew about them already. You know, whereas quick service, there are carts everywhere. Like, you see tons of people walking up. Like, it's very easy to spot those food carts, the quick service places, whereas, like, the more specialty dining, they're more off the beaten path and you have to know they're there. You need a reservation, but you have to know they're there too to even, like, think about going there.
Exactly. And then this kind of brings us down to our next level, which is, you may be a runner, you may hate running, but you're like, you know what, I'm gonna sign up to do a Run Disney race.
I think it's bonus points. Again, here's a bonus points one of, you're not a runner.
Yeah.
But Disney makes you a runner because you want to do Run Disney.
So I know people that have started to run these races because they realize that that's like a whole new level. Like,
a couple people.
Yeah.
Couple
so like, yeah, Jennifer Kiefer started running. They wanted to do the Disneyland race. And now I think that we're going to convince them to come over to Disney World and do the races over there. My friend Nicole, who's going to be doing the Lion King race, because that's a theme that, like, she's passionate about. So, like, you know, it brings people in, and even though they might not be people that are like, oh my gosh, I want to go run, it kind of makes them want to makes them want to run. And so I don't know. It makes me very like happy on the inside.
Well, you're a runner, so getting more people into running is great for you. I think the other reason this is like a huge sign of your fandom and love of Disney is the fact that you have to be up at 3 a.m. for all of these races. So even if you're a runner, like somebody that like enjoys running, it is still another level of commitment, especially if you're doing multiple races in a weekend.
Yeah.
Because like getting up at 3 a.m. one day, that's one thing. You can kind of like take a nap, be okay. But doing multiple races, that adds up, especially when you're at Disney, because then you're foregoing the nighttime fireworks. Like you're having to give something up because you're going to be too tired. Like you can't stay up until midnight and then be up at, you know, 3 to run this race. Maybe you are. Maybe you're somebody that needs 2 hours of sleep, but
I would say like not even just running it, but going to support runners. Like, you know, our friends came to cheer us on when we did the half marathon after doing the 10K the day before.
Right.
So they still had to be up. I mean, it wasn't at 3, but they still had to be up really early to come and watch us finish, which is a little level of dedication again that's just like, you know, it's extra.
Yeah. And I think kind of with this, like, I don't know that I can maybe, you know, one or the other, I don't necessarily know is a deeper level of fandom or not, but kind of in the same respect of, yeah, you either start running or you're a runner and, you know, you want to do run Disney races and you're committed and you'll get up at 3 a.m. I think if you are somebody that sees Disney vacations as not a vacation, and I understand this is definitely something of a certain level of privilege to be able to take Disney vacations. And I feel like, you know, we've gone a lot. I think if you're like an annual pass holder, you probably start to feel this way where you go frequently enough that you're kind of more relaxed about it because you know, hey, I don't have to do everything this time. I'm going to come back. We come frequently enough. And you kind of don't see it as a vacation. It's like, okay, we're going to go to Disney once this year for even a short weekend or a couple short weekends or whatever, some races, you know, like you're going down for that. But that's not our vacation. Like, where else are we going to go? You know, maybe we're going to go hiking, you know, do something else. And I think that's, again, it's definitely a level where it's not going to be financially an option for a lot of people. So I see that. So, you know, it's not like, again, kind of to your point, like if you can't do this,
it's not dinging you in any way.
It's not saying like you're not a fan, but I do feel like that there's probably a group of people that you go so much that you're like, you don't even consider it a vacation anymore. You just kind of consider it of like
part of life.
Yeah. Like I'm going to my happy place. Like this is kind of like my stress relief for me.
It's like going to a spa or something almost.
Because I kind of feel like, you know, you hear people say this a lot of like, you go on vacation and then you come back and, you know, people ask you how your vacation was. Like, I need a vacation for my vacation because you're kind of stressed from, are the flights going to be on time? Like, am I going to, you know, did I do enough? Did I see everything? You know, we pack so much in the amount of time we're there where it's like, again, when you have that level of comfort with a Disney park where you don't feel those stressors, it's a different kind of vibe, you know, like I've started to notice that just again, as we go again, we'll go for a long weekend or something. And it's kind of like, hey, that's fine. Like, we'll just do what we need to do. No big deal. It's like, we're going for a race. Typically it's like we're going for something, you know? So again, that's why it's kind of like maybe not a vacation per se. But again,
it's been a different level.
Yeah.
Since we've been to at least Walt Disney World, where we just went down just to go to Walt Disney World.
Right.
It's been something else going on that was bringing us to the park.
So moving down to the next level is that you've done a backstage tour. And if you're not really familiar with all the behind the scenes, the backstage tours that... Behind the scenes is one of them. But if you're not familiar with a lot of the tours, we did an episode ranking specifically the Walt Disney World tours a few weeks ago. So go check that one out. We rank our favorites and then some of the ones we haven't done. But again, kind of like what we were talking about with food and how some of the sit-down restaurants, some of the more themed dining is hidden, and it's not something that you see. And again, you can go to the parks and probably miss a lot of these restaurants. I feel like you can go to the parks and miss that a lot of these tours exist.
I mean, if you didn't, you know, you don't listen to a podcast like ours where people talk about it, or conversely, like you're in the park and you see a Plaid walking around with a group of people with like little earbuds in, and you accidentally maybe even join along and you find out what they're doing.
Yeah, like, you almost have to ask, like, what are you guys doing?
Yeah, you don't really know that these exist. You would have to like actively seek out something that's going to tell you about it, just like we're telling you about it right now.
Right. And I think I think there's two things here. It's one, it's just knowing they exist.
Yep.
And then two, actually like going caring. On one. Yeah, like caring, well, be like, I'm interested in it. And I think
it's, you're giving something up to do these things, because they are usually, I don't know of any of these that we've taken that aren't at least partially during park hours that we could have been in a park.
Correct.
Riding rides.
Correct. And I think the other thing is it's comes with, like, you need almost a curiosity or a love of Disney history to want to go on these, because again, mm-hmm. they are behind the scenes of the theme park. So you have to be interested in how do theme parks run, or like in the case of the Keys to the Kingdom tour at Magic Kingdom, about kind of Disney's corporate philosophy and the history of this is why this park is built this way. So this is why this is here. This is why this is here. This is a history about why this ride is built this way. And like, a lot of people probably don't care about that, you know, like, I mean, and it's fine not to, but like, you know, you're not going to go on the behind the scenes tour if you don't love living with the land. Like, you're gonna be like, okay, it's a greenhouse. What do I care? But like, if you,
I'm going to say that to you next time we go to get to,
that's fine. You can do that. I'll go ride it without you. That's fine.
Well, I like living with the land just to get your goat.
Or like an Animal Kingdom. Like, you know, you have to have an interest in animals to like want to go and learn more about them. So it is knowledge. And then, it's just kind of like that curiosity about knowing more about what goes into these parks in order to take one of these. So again, it's kind of a deeper understanding and appreciation, I think, for the parks. And you want to expand on that. And that's why you would take one of these tours.
Right. Hey, you know, I realize we left something off here, and I want to see where you think that we should put this one in. How about going to an after hours event? Where would you put that? Ooh, what would you put that in?
I think an after hours event is probably pretty high, because again, I think a lot of people go to the after hours events, and I think they are very well publicized. Again, mm-hmm. if you kind of think about this as a funnel of like, what is most popular, what are most people doing versus kind of like least popular, smallest number of people doing, I think after hours events, especially recently, like Disney really promotes these.
So maybe like we put it up at like, I think, what was it? Number two was that you've been to multiple Disney parks passed on your love of Disney.
I think it's somewhere around
generations.
There. Yeah. I think it's somewhere around there, because it is. Yeah. If you've just been to a Disney park, but you have to have a different level and appreciation to be like, oh, I want to go see, you know, all the characters dressed up in their Halloween outfits or in their holiday outfits, or, you know, be there whenever the crowds are less so I can ride these rides and see different things. So yeah, I think it's probably maybe past that, like you've been to multiple parks. Yeah. Kind of different generations type thing. So.
Right. Yeah. The next one that we have is that you've gone on an Adventures by Disney.
Yeah. I think now we're getting into like really specific stuff.
Yeah.
And I think this is where like, this is like deep, deep into the fandom. And I think an Adventures by Disney is definitely that. This is another one
this
where
this is another one where you, it's
very expensive. Yeah, and this like is not something that people are going to do.
Privileged one. And again, so it's one of those ones where it's just like, you know, if you save up a really long time or to do it, it's not, you have to do it again. But it's just, you know, you think about it and you think, okay, like I love Disney. I now want to take some of that Disney magic and apply it to places that aren't Disney.
Yeah. Yeah. It's basically making your non-Disney vacations Disney. So it's like even your non-Disney vacations, to your point, you're going to Europe. You're going some Africa, Australia, wherever, and you're making it Disney.
Right.
By making Adventures by Disney.
It is interesting. Like, you know, we've only done an Adventures by Disney like tour. There are other companies that do offer something similar to like, hey, we're going to take you. We have a curated list of here's our itinerary. This is what we're going to do. So I would be really curious to see how Disney differs,
how it compares
from like other companies doing this. But I mean, I do feel like we went to, if you haven't heard the episode, we did do an episode a couple years ago.
Portugal.
We went to Portugal and we did an Adventures by Disney there. And it was really like nicely curated for us. We had a local. So we had two guides. We had a local guide who spoke English and obviously Portuguese and other languages too. She was brilliant. And then we had a Disney employee who also was like with us and making sure everything was going, you know.
Yeah,
going down
but
really
it wasn't
well.
Like, and it's Adventures by Disney, but it's not like it's, you know, Mickey and Minnie are there. Like, it's not like it's like Disney-fied. I mean, it is a normal kind of vacation abroad.
I just felt like the customer service level was very Disney.
Yeah. And they do gear it towards more like families. So they have like a junior adventurers night where like they show Disney movies and stuff. So I think that's kind of like where they put their spin on it.
Yeah. We didn't have any like young kids.
Like super young.
We had some like early teenagers, but for the most part, the families that we were with, they had like early teenagers or teenagers with them.
I will say the other thing again, you know, not everybody's going to be able to go on Adventures by Disney, but I think even if you are aware it exists, I think you're kind of at this level, because again, it's like if you've been to the parks, if you've been on a cruise and now you're like, oh, Disney does this Adventures by Disney thing. Like it's this curated vacation.
Yeah. And you've even just looked into it. Like, what do they do? Where do they go?
Right.
Like it puts you on this level because you have an awareness.
Right. Because again, it's like you're now taking a non-Disney location and being like, I love Disney so much, I want to go to this place with Disney.
Yeah.
You know, even though I'm not going to a park, or you know, some of them go to the parks. Like if you go to Japan or China, and even I think Paris, they have somewhere like you go to the parks wherever there's a Disney park. But like, yeah, you're kind of taking that love and like, all right, I want a vacation with Disney anywhere around the world. And again, it's not going to obviously be for everybody, but I think there's a lot of people that don't even know Disney does this. We didn't know Disney did this. I mean, we did not know Disney did this until probably a year or two before we even went on our Adventures by Disney.
How did we even find out that they existed?
I don't know. I mean, I don't remember how we found out, but I know it wasn't something we knew about when we started this podcast. I know that for sure.
Oh, definitely not. Yeah. I think, there's some amounts of this stuff that we've learned through like just researching for the podcast that we're like, oh, what? These different behind the scenes tours? Like when we started this podcast, we didn't know about the behind the scenes tours either, I don't think. So there's a lot of things that we've learned as we've gone. But yeah, like that is something, you're right. A few years back, we had no idea it existed. Right.
All right, so the next level is definitely something that anybody can do, but I feel like it is one of the smallest subsets of,
or maybe we don't notice,
Disney theme park fandom. I feel like it's small, and this is Disney bounding, and I'm throwing in like Dapper Days in with this, because I feel like if you go, tons of people wear Disney t-shirts, they wear matching family vacation t-shirts, all that sort of stuff. Lots of people do that. But I feel like people Disney bounding in the parks is a much smaller group. I think the Dapper Days or doing the Dapper Bounds, dressing up, that's even smaller. Yeah. Now obviously they have Dapper Days where I think a lot of people do it, but just like on a regular day, when you kind of dress fancy in the parks, I think this is just such a small subset that
it takes a lot of commitment to do Dapper Days, because you think about you're probably gotta be almost a local. I'm not saying you're only a local if you do the Dapper Days, but if you're wearing an uncomfortable like outfit that is going to be a dressy outfit to the Disney parks, then you probably are gonna go home and change, go back to your hotel and change at some point, because Florida,
you're not gonna have that all day.
Can be swampy, and it is not really an ideal situation to be wearing heels, or even I'm sure men's dress shoes are probably not that comfortable in the park all day, or just so I think that is something that it requires a certain level of commitment.
Yeah, I think it's the commitment. And I think even like bounding, because you have to have a love for a certain character.
Mm-hmm.
And you want to show that off in a different way, you know, a more kind of unique, specific way, and kind of even especially like the more obscure you get, you know, like it's just it's a different level, and even commitment of like, because there's a certain, you know, aspect of it too, of like, you don't want to feel silly.
Yeah.
You know, dressing this way. And so you have to be comfortable knowing like, hey, I'm not going to be judged in the parks. And that only comes with like the comfort level of like having been to the parks for a while and knowing that like other people do this, and people aren't going to like judge me negatively if I try to, you know, dress a little bit different because I want to show off my fandom and my love for Disney or this character, et cetera. So like it takes a while to kind of, I feel like, even get there mentally of like being able to to be comfortable with this. I know, at least for me, that's kind of where I was, of like, even at first, I'm like, I don't know about this bounding thing. Like, I kind of get it conceptually, but like, I don't know that I want to go into the parks dressed like this.
Well, okay. So like, I do think we probably should have started by defining this, because again, not all of our listeners maybe have heard our episode on bounding or even know what Dapper Days are. So Disney bounding is to basically try to fashionably model your outfit after a character. Now, this does not mean that you are, you know, getting in a furry costume and you're being Simba.
Yeah, it's not cosplay.
It's not cosplay. Yeah. It is... You know, if I, for example, wanted to be, I'm trying to think of an easy, okay, Snow White is one of the easier characters, I feel like, mm-hmm. to Disney bound, because her color scheme is so striking, because she has that royal blue and the yellow. She has the apple, the bob haircut even. So you
can, bow and the hair.
The bow and the hair. Yeah. So it's a relatively easy look to pull off. So then you would find clothing that kind of go with that.
Blue shirt. Yellow pants, yellow dress, right. Something like that. Yeah.
And so it doesn't have to be even something overly committed. Like, again, I some of you guys probably have heard of, you know, not a sponsor, but the internet company Hilara, which they make like dresses for women and different workout gear. So I bought one of their yellow dresses and then I made a little barrette. Oh, I didn't make the barrette. I bought the barrette and then made a bow or a rose to put on the barrette, and then I bounded as Belle. So that was like a pretty easy look to pull off. You can elevate it, of course, by getting jewelry that has like maybe like roses on it or something that books, even people sometimes will even bring props like a book into the park so that they can, you know, even further nod to the character. So you can do it really subtly or a little bit more overtly. So that's kind of what bounding is. And as far as the Dapper Days are concerned, this is sort of dressing up. So this is an outfit that you are not going to wear to the parks.
I mean,
typically,
like people wearing like tuxedos almost for some stuff.
And
yeah.
I mean, they're not like ball gowns. In fact, I don't think you can wear a ball gown to the parks. So they're usually shorter, like midi length dresses or even shorter dresses.
But I mean, you could almost consider them. I would maybe consider them more like cocktail dresses.
Yeah. And I feel
definitely like something you could almost wear to a wedding, a black tie event. Like it's an elevated level.
Yeah. And so, you know, a lot of times people will do those and they'll do them even as a bound. So you get a dress.
Yeah,
and
you're
then,
mixing them together.
Right.
Yeah.
And you sort of like mash that up. Like, I'm sure we could probably do our 1923 look from the cruise ship as a Dapper Day sort of look.
Yeah. I mean, mine kind of was a stormtrooper. It was a white suit, but it was basically a dapper outfit that was a stormtrooper bound. Mm-hmm. I mean, I could definitely wear that for Dapper Days, I think,
right.
what we wore. So.
Yeah, and then I had a flapper dress that was black, and then I had some, like, red nods so that, because Darth Vader has, like, red pieces. I could have made it more overt by, like, maybe getting, like, the little helmet and putting it on my my headpiece or something. But, yeah, so it was, I mean, that's sort of what Dapper Days
are. Yeah, so again, I don't know. I mean, do you think there's more people doing this than I kind of give credit for it?
I do. Okay. I think there's a lot of people walking around the parks that are doing it subtly, because I've been following like the Disney bound like account long enough to notice that a lot of the characters do have like a common color scheme. Mm-hmm. So it's not, you know, it's not Snow White where you're like, yeah, somebody's intentionally putting that yellow and blue together. Not that they look bad together. They do. They look amazing together, but it's not a typical pairing that people make naturally. So I think, though, that it is difficult sometimes to pick them out. Now, last time we were at Disneyland, we saw a woman wearing like a yellow jumpsuit. And that one was very obvious, like, oh, that's not a normal thing that people wear, but she was very obviously bounding Powerline from a Goofy movie.
Yeah, and maybe that's where I'm coming from, because to your point, I think there's probably a lot more that are doing it, but it's subtle. Mm-hmm. And I think you notice more of the ones like that, where it's like you can clearly tell that's not
a full yellow outfit. Is not, it's a choice. Yeah. Not saying it's a bad choice.
Right.
It's just
that's not something you would wear to a thing. Where your point is, like, you know, you can bound obviously with like jeans and a t-shirt, or mm-hmm. you know, a skirt, shirt, something like that, where, you know, you could not notice that because everybody in the parks has shorts and a t-shirt, that sort of thing going on. Whereas, yeah, where you get like the more specific, or as you add on jewelry, necklaces, you
headbands.
Know, headbands, stuff like that, it starts to stick out a little bit more. But mm-hmm. I think overall, though, I still think, you know, if you figure 20 million people go to the Magic Kingdom every year. I think it's a very small subset. So, you know, it could be a million people. So it could still be a lot of people, but there's 19 million people that aren't doing that. And again, I'm just kind of making up numbers here. So I think, but, you know, relatively. So I'm just saying, I think, you know, because there's so many people that go, even a small number is going to seem like a lot of people. But I think overall that is a small subset. So I think the final level, so this is like you are deep into Disney vacation fandom here, is that essentially you are writing the book on the Society of Explorers and Adventurers lore. So you are an expert in sea, and you are writing the lore. And what I
mean, yeah, explain.
What I mean by that is, I mean, one, you know what the Society of Explorers and Adventurers is. And so, yeah, you're not necessarily writing the book on it. Like, you're not the authority on it. But, like, you know sea exists. You know the rides have backstories. You know the backstories. You know that they're interconnected. You understand, like, Constance Hatchaway in The Haunted Mansion, one of her husbands was George Hightower. And you know, okay, well, I know that name Hightower is part of the Hightower family. Harrison Hightower III had is the Tower of Terror in Tokyo Disney Sea. The whole, you know, Donald Duck chair in the Haunted Mansion. Like, you get excited. You're one of those people that was excited that they announced that's going to be on the Disney Treasure. Like, most people are going to be like, it's a chair. What are you talking about? Like, it's that level where you, because you can go to the parks and have no idea that any of these rides have a backstory.
So you're saying, like, the Easter eggs, you know, those.
Exactly.
So
yeah.
This could also probably include the people who go around and try to find all of the hidden Mickeys.
Yeah, I think hidden Mickeys are a little bit,
I don't know,
more
though.
I think people are more aware of hidden Mickeys. Again, I think it's...
But I'm talking... No, I'm not talking about just trying to find them. I'm talking about the people who, like, go around and, like, map them out.
Oh,
and say,
yeah, yeah.
Like, here's this. Okay, now let's try to find more hidden Mickeys. Because I know, like, when I'm in the parks, I'll keep my eyes out for them, but I don't...
You're not actively looking.
I'm not actively searching for them. I'm not actively documenting them for people. But I know that there are people that are that level of committed to, I want to find as many of these as I possibly can.
Yeah, but I think my point, kind of going back to the attractions, is like, it is so easy to go and have no idea there's a backstory. Like, the Imagineers make such detailed backstories, and so many of them interconnect, and so many of the cues have callbacks to other rides, to previous rides. But, like, most people do not know any of that exists, because you can go ride Big Thunder Mountain Railroad and have no idea it is supposed to be
a ghost train.
Ghost trains. You know, there was an old mining town there. They had the mining trains got haunted and take people, you know, started going on themselves. So then somebody said, hey, let's make money off of this, and we're going to make it an attraction. And tourists, you're now basically a tourist coming to ride an attraction of a ghost mine car. Most people don't know that. Like, you know, there's that level of detail. But, like, that's true. Like, that's the backstory for that ride. And Imagineers invented that. And it's so easy not to know that exists, that once you do know exists, and then it just expands from there, because the people with Big Thunder Mountain are connected to the people that do the Jungle Cruise, that do Haunted Mansion, that, again, in Tokyo, the Harrison Hightower Hotel, like, their Tower of Terror, like, everything connects together. And once you see it, it's almost like you get plugged into the Matrix, like, where you just start seeing how and then everything connects.
What was the name of the place that they closed down that I can never...
The Adventurers Club.
Yeah, the Adventurers Club is also tied into that, because it was like a sea-affiliated club that no longer exists. But when it did, it was pretty cool.
Yeah,
and they've tied that in as well.
Yeah, so just seeing how all of that, yeah, that comes together. So I feel like, yeah, it's like you're Neo. Like, I'm Neo now. Like, I just see ones. I see ones and zeros. I see ones and zeros everywhere as I'm walking through Disney parks, connecting all this stuff together. So yeah. So I think once you get to that point,
I think
you're in too deep at that point. There's no coming back.
You've strayed too far off of the Disney train there. You're talking about Neo. So, like, I'm trying to think, maybe Hunter. If you're a hunter, you know, you've got you've tracked it down.
Hunter's horrible at tracking. He never tracks anybody.
This season he has been.
And then there's like a alligator on them. He's like, uh-oh, that gator's right there.
This season he's completely lost all abilities.
Yeah. Yeah, so I think once you hit that level, I mean, it's like there's like no going back. I mean, you're basically like with a corkboard connecting strings together, like you're trying to solve like a murder mystery here. Again, like you've blown past everything. You have all the merch. You've been to the parks. You know everything. Like you're starting to connect backstories to attractions. Like
you have like a little mini museum in your house.
Yeah, yeah. Like it's become a problem. Basically, that's what happens. Then you start a podcast. Then here we are. Here we are. We're in so deep. Now we have to have a podcast and talk about this because otherwise we would sit and talk about it just normally. And it kind of feels weird.
Just the two of us
talking.
We're just
about,
like, hey, let's just have these conversations, yeah. But like put them up for other people who might actually enjoy listening
that way,
to this.
Again, that way people don't look at you strange of like, why do you talk about this stuff so much? You're like, oh, no, it's okay.
Oh, we have a podcast.
We have a podcast
fine.
For it. Exactly.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
That's.
This is the excuse.
That's the deepest level. When you then make excuses, use a podcast as your excuse for your Disney fandom.
Exactly.
So it's not weird. It's for our podcast.
Yeah, exactly.
Exactly. So, but would love to hear where our listeners feel like they fall on kind of that Disney fandom level. If you're watching this on YouTube, let us know in the comments. If you're listening to it, head over to our Instagram at Enchanted Ears Podcast and let us know over there. But that wraps up the show for this week. I want to thank everybody again for listening. If you've not done so, please leave us a rating or a review. Subscribe wherever you get your podcast. It really helps and we really appreciate it.
Thanks for lending us your ears.
Have a great week, everybody. We'll see you here next Monday.
Bye-bye.